We went on jet skis this weekend.
Oh.
My dad rented 4 jet skis.
Wow.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
For a family vacation. But, you know, we have a ton of kids.
Yeah. And
so 4 was actually the appropriate amount.
Yeah.
For everybody to be able to ride for, we had them for about a little over 2 hours, which was the exact amount. It was like after 2 hours, it had been like, we're pretty much done.
You can only do so many 360s, you know, yes. And stuff.
But I did throw off my kids. I threw off Luke 4 times. Pretty good.
Just sitting on the back.
Yeah. Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
We also played a game of, have you ever played Spoons?
Yeah.
The card game?
I was worried you were about to say chicken.
Oh, no, not with the jet skis. I've switched topics. The game Spoons,
of course.
The card game?
Yeah, of course.
Well,
I like to play steak knives just to make it more interesting.
We made that joke as well. We said chainsaws or you steak knives. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
We played that. We made that
cattle
joke
prods.
As well. Yes. But Spoons has been a tradition in our family for a long time. We've played this game for years and years and years. Our family is very competitive. Spoons is a very competitive game for us.
Yeah.
There's been sheetrock broken. Mm-hmm. There's been tables that have been...
I mean, that's a game that will literally come to bloodshed.
Well, look here. Look at that.
Yeah, there you go.
And I got like a bruise over here. Can't really probably see it as well, but like it was a bloodbath.
Yeah.
And I did not win, which I was not very happy about. But
now, when you are taking the first spoon, are you a chaos? Like, do you smash the other spoons just to send them flipping?
Good question. It depends. It depends for me.
Okay, yeah.
It depends on who's winning and how deep in the game we are.
Yeah.
Because and also depends on just my rival for the, like, Kaylin was my rival during this time. So I would always grab the one closest to her and then pull back to where all the other spoons would go away from her.
Yeah.
To where she would have to go flying across the table to try to get one. Which is why I ended up with... Kaylin is also incredibly competitive. And
I would have guessed that she was the one who gave you that scratch.
Yeah. So, it's pretty gnarly.
Sweet.
But it was really fun. Every year my parents rent an Airbnb. Our family all goes, like me and both my sisters and their families, we all get together for the weekend, try to make it a long weekend if we can. And we have just a couple nights of family fun, and whether we rent a boat or some jet skis, or and we go out to, you know, some fun dinner or something like that at some point.
Yeah.
And get the kids down. And my dad bought a karaoke machine. And so the kids all went down. The kids played with the karaoke machine.
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Way too much, actually. Whatever you think is way too much, it was more than that.
Yeah.
But then he busted it out after the kids went down and we were outside, you know, enjoying some mirth and music. And I don't think I've ever really had an itch to ever go karaoke. I can say that's never been an itch that I've wanted to scratch.
Yeah.
And still, I feel the same way. But I did do it.
I am similar to that. I don't ever say to myself, let's go karaoke. But if I happen to be somewhere and they are karaokeing, if there is karaoke,
mm-hmm.
and I am, if I'm pressed to do so, I will.
What's your song?
You know, this is something everybody has to have, and I don't have one. I don't know. I feel like I know what you're getting at, and I totally agree. And I'm on board with this. I just that everybody needs a go-to karaoke that you know you can get up. I can get through this song without humiliating myself,
mm-hmm.
just in case that social situation arises.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have one. I am a good enough singer where like I can sing something. I don't need an emergency song, but I do think it's wise to have ready to go. You know what it is what your go-to is if that happens. I'm with you. What's yours?
My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. No.
You will regret making me do this. That I would tell you.
No, I lassoed my lovely wife into a duet.
Oh.
And we sang We Got Married in a Fever. What's the actual... Johnny Cash and June Carter? Sprout, we got married. Jackson.
I was like, what's the name of that town I'm singing? And it's like, is it
Jackson? Ugh. That's what we sang together.
It's not Phoenix. It's Jackson.
Which is great. That's a good song. You can sing. I mean, Johnny Cash's low parts are pretty tough, but you could just kind of, you know, you can kind of fake that.
Yeah.
Nice. You know, do that.
Yeah.
So that's what we did this weekend.
Very fun.
Yeah.
I don't have any good stories to tell. I was outside all weekend, working myself to the bone.
But you finished your wheat, so that's good.
I did. I decided I was done. I had enough.
Like one of the last episodes, I said, like, it was off air.
It was off air, when you asked me, is there a point where you just decide you're done and you just mow all this down? And I told you, absolutely. And I knew it was coming, and this weekend, it was it.
Nice. Well, while we were gone,
I got a good harvest.
And you got a ton of wheat. Yeah.
Yeah.
While we were gone, something got into our chicken coop, whether it was a raccoon or a possum or something. And we lost probably about 15 to 20 chickens.
Oh, gosh.
Like,
that's not going to be a raccoon or a possum because they won't kill that many.
Well, we were gone for like 4 days, so...
Still, that's going to be like a fox. That's going to be more of a predator than either one of those.
Yeah.
A fox or a coyote or something. That's going to
We may have only lost 12. I don't know. It was... And unfortunately, I actually mentioned this on the show not too long ago. The four little chicks that we got, they're all gone.
Yeah. They're always the first to go.
Right. And then...
A raccoon is only going to kill one, and then it's going to... Eat it, and
then the brooding hens were the next to go, I think.
Yeah, because they just sit there.
Yeah,
real easy to get.
So that was a bummer, but
yeah, that is a bummer. You hate to hear that.
Yeah,
you know this is what they call chicken math. That chicken math means different things to different people. Some people just mean it as like, oh, I had started off with 2 chickens, and now I have 22, and like they call that chicken math. What I call chicken math is that how many chickens do you have? Like, that's a dynamic number. It's not it's never a static number.
Right.
Because you always need to be, you need like a drip of new chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Because just to equalize the pressure from the unexpected losses. Right. So you need a slow pipeline of chickens, just so that you can stay at whatever the number is that you have in mind, on average.
What's one of the things that your kids do that catch you off guard, but you're like really impressed?
So, here lately, especially my oldest two have just been really, they have just been so helpful. Just they're getting really good at knowing, like, you know what, this is just kind of what the family needs. Like just now, as we finished praying, and Mary went in and did the dishes. I didn't ask her to do that. I wasn't expecting her to do that. She just knew that, hey, and she went and loaded the dishwasher. That's not part of her chores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they're just, that's really awesome. I'm always just so proud of them. Because that's a real sign of maturity, that you recognize there's some way I can serve here,
mm-hmm.
and nobody asks me. I just know this needs to be done.
That's a way.
Honestly, they have a lot of cool talents. My daughters, even like my oldest three daughters, can cook and sew. Like
American crochet, like a.
She can crochet. I mean, they've made clothes for kids. Like, Elizabeth made a dress for Juan's daughter.
Mary made one for Avalon. Mary.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So they take sewing lessons. There's a woman who comes to our house for free once a week and teaches them sewing lessons.
That's awesome.
Yeah, dude, it is. It's incredible. She's an amazing woman. And also they're really good cooks. They make breakfast. Like they take turns making breakfast in the morning during the week. They're impressive, impressive young ladies.
That's way better.
I'm always very proud of them.
I was going to say that Leo was awesome at riding a mechanical bull.
Well, that's cool.
So,
dude, you know who's not good at riding a mechanical bull? Me.
Oh, bummer.
I haven't tried since I was a kid, but I feel it. That
it's not in your bones.
You know, I weigh about 50 pounds more than the last time I tried to do that. And I'll bet you that
doesn't help.
That 50 pounds is not on my side in this equation.
The restaurant that we went to on our family vacation, it had a mechanical bull. And so several of the kids got up there. Leo gets up there. And all the other kids are like holding on with two hands. Leo gets up there, holds one hand. His other hand goes out just perpendicular or parallel with the ground, like his hand is in a chute. It's not up yet. Just like his hand is in a chute. It kicks off. His hand goes up. He stays up the whole time and rides it like a champ. It was epic.
Good boy.
One demographic that Lionel Richie was not thinking of when he wrote that song, Easy Like Sunday Morning, was Catholic families. Because I don't know about you, Dave, but Sunday morning is pretty chaotic for us. We're trying to get all the kids into the van, beat Father down the aisle, get into our pews. But one thing as Father is I want to prepare my kids to receive the gospel before they actually get to Holy Mass. And one way we do that is by listening to the Amen app and listening to the Sunday gospel on the way to Holy Mass.
I agree. That's something that we always do as a family as well, is that we review the Sunday readings before we get there. That way, when you're there, you're not, and you're distracted in Mass, you don't have to be focused like, oh no, I missed it. You know, and as well as you can kind of let your imagination run with the readings because you're already familiar. You know what's coming. So you can kind of see it in your mind even before it's read. And a great way to do that is listening to it together on the Amen app. They have so many things. Some of the other highlights that I really, really love are two books that have really meant a lot in my life. One of them is Divine Mercy in My Soul by St. Maria Faustina. And then the other one is True Devotion by St. Louis de Montfort. Both of those books really changed my life. And they're free on the Amen app. Just download it, and then you can listen to it, which is a great way to approach both of those books.
Yeah, and since 2021, they've had 950,000 downloads of this app, and I want to get them to 1 million. I think we can get them to 1 million by everybody downloading the app right now.
And like you said, because it's a free app, there's no paywall. There's no downside to downloading the app.
No risk.
You're not going to get signed up into a subscription. You're not going to have to pay upfront costs. It's just free.
That's right. You can make a donation if you want, but it's completely free. It's sponsored by the Augustine Institute. So go download the Amen app right now. Thank you for sponsoring the Catholic Man Show.
I've been getting a huge kick out of this. Just like everybody. Everybody's been loving this. I've been loving it. The World Cup visitors and all of the videos online of just them being amazed at how cool America is. You know, some of it I'm like watching going, you know, they're just raving about Waffle House or Kane.
Really? I haven't seen any of these videos.
Oh, dude. There are... It's become a trend of all of these World Cup visitors, dude. Honestly, it's very edifying. There's not a whole lot of things that just make you feel good about humanity, but watching, for instance, the Tartan Army of Scotland invade Boston and literally drink some of these bars dry, like they were having to make emergency deliveries of beer because the bars were out of beer. And like, there's an interview from the bar owner who said, oh, yeah, we've done the Olympics. We've done the Super Bowl. We've done, like, he named all these. And he said, we have never seen anything like this before. But just like the unity among these different rival teams and all of these foreigners going to eating barbecue for the first time. Oh. And losing their mind.
I bet.
And even going to the fast food and saying like, this is incredible. This food is amazing. You know, and I'm watching it going like, yeah, but you're at Burger King. Don't. No, like go somewhere better. But to them, they just say, it's like, you guys have been holding out on us and this incredible food and just how huge the country is. I mean, all kinds of stuff about America that, it's just refreshing, especially here at like with the 250, to have this outside perspective. And you get all these people who saying, you know, everything I ever heard about America was that it was a country in decline. You know, the liberal media of Europe has nothing good to say about America.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just been so great to watch some of these videos.
I'll have to watch
and
some
just
of
see
those.
Like how much it's a good reminder of the good things that we have and to be
but
like,
you don't mean by that like Burger King.
No, but it's just like they're coming over here and walking around to Costco and like with eyes the size of watermelons just going like what is like and like one guy some German guy was like yeah we're in this museum that sells they sell you know he didn't know what to call it because it's not a supermarket. It's like a museum or something.
The food.
Yeah. And just like the size of beverages that we have here and just everything, how it's just, they're just blown away. It's very cool. I've loved it. You should check it out.
I'll have to look at it.
Yeah. It's very fun.
We also have this evening, the keeper of the yummy scale, Jim Spencer, in our midst. In our presence this evening, we're sipping on a little bit of bourbon. This is a foolproof 1792 bourbon. We bought this from BA Wine and Spirits. Great establishment from Catholic company or Catholic owned company.
Yeah.
And this is a barrel that they picked themselves. So.
Mm-hmm. Which I like it when liquor stores do that. You know, you can find, it's not hard to find necessarily. Sometimes a liquor store will buy a whole barrel.
Right.
Of a particular whiskey. And so they own the barrel. It's the only place to get that particular one. It's just cool. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a local flavor from an international distributed whiskey. So I think it's kind of cool.
Or a national distributed whiskey.
Yeah, but either one.
Yeah. More on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
So we've had 1792 before, probably a couple times.
Yes.
But this one is barrel strength.
Yeah, foolproof.
Yes. And it's hot.
It is. Jim, what does the yummy scale say on this?
I like this very much. It's a 5.99.
5.99. Wait, isn't it out of 6? He just shrugged his shoulders. Okay. All right. 5.99. That's, hey, it is what it is.
5.99.
I thought several weeks ago we had one that you said was just unbelievable that you had it like a 5.84 and it was supposed to be this. So this is even better. Okay. This is the best whiskey you've ever had. Is that the vibe? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's what you're trying to say. I don't know how to interpret that data any other way.
Don't think about it.
Okay, I won't think about it anymore.
Be indifferent.
I will. I'll be wholly indifferent to it.
Which is what we're going to talk about tonight.
Oh, I was spelling it with a W. Holy. Holy
nice.
Indifferent. Thank you.
Nice. Well played.
Shh.
What do you think about the whiskey?
I do really like it. I am not someone who needs a smooth whiskey. I like some gristle. I drink black coffee. So I like this kind of whiskey because I'm a man. And I don't I don't drink froofy drinks. I drink man beverages. This is one of them, so I like it.
Nice.
What do you think?
It is hot. I would like to try it with a little bit of water just to see.
Yeah,
For the sake of science. But I think longtime listeners will know that I'm partial to 1792. I like that bourbon.
Uh-huh.
I think I like the presentation. I like the bottle. I like the price point. I like the whiskey. It's just overall a good.
It's
bourbon.
A staple. It's one of those that you might just keep around because yeah, you can get it for like $30.
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's very affordable. It's just a good classic, but it's also not the kind of whiskey that, you know, you couldn't use in a mixed drink. You know, like I would use it. Certainly, you could make a, you know, an old fashioned with it if you wanted
yeah,
to.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, so it is a good one to have around.
Big fan. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about Holy Indifference, but I want to maybe frame it with just ordering of time in your day. That'll lead maybe in, hopefully will lead into Holy Indifference.
Okay.
I was reading again, one of my favorite books of all time that I think every man should read called The Intellectual Life by Sartre Lange. That was the thing, Jim, as we were leaving my house, I said, I think there's something that I was supposed to be bringing. And it was the copy of that book because I wrote a couple weeks ago, you said you'd never read it before. You don't even own a copy. And I have a copy for you. And that was what I was going to bring, Jim, and I forgot. So
my whole life is just going to be off track now.
But we'll wait until next time, and I'll okay. bring it to you.
All right.
But one of the things that he brings into this equation that I really like that has been very beneficial to me is that you are not at the mercy of your mood. And that a man who waits to feel like he wants to do something never actually starts. And that order is carried when you, order is actually carried out even when you actually don't feel like doing it.
Yeah.
And.
Because the hierarchy of things doesn't change based on how you feel.
Right. And I think I've talked about this maybe a couple months back on the Catholic Man Show, but I was reflecting on like, you know, what makes a good day? Like, how do you define what a good day looks like. And I came to the conclusion that a good day, like you have to establish what a good day looks like before the day begins because there's so many variables in the day in which you cannot control.
Sure.
Right. And so if you've established what you consider a good day, regardless of the highs or the lows, that happen that affect you throughout the day that are out of your control, you can say that was a good day. I was listening to Kevin O'Leary a while back, he's on Shark Tank,
Mr. Wonderful,
and in one of his interviews, he said something. He said one of the best advice I can give to a beginning entrepreneur or business guy is to never let your day be depicted on your highs or your lows.
Be dependent or like, don't let that set the tone.
Don't let that set the tone.
Yeah.
He said, I'll give you an example. Like, I'll start the day and I'll get a call from my lawyer saying I'm being sued for hundreds of millions of dollars.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, that's the worst. And he said, like, that could, if I let that take over my day, I would ruin my day. Because he said, like, what could end up happening is at 11 a.m. I could get another call and we close the deal for $1 billion. But that also can't get in the way of my day because I still have the 3 to 5 things that I have to get accomplished for today. And I will not let the day end until I get those 3 to 5 things done. And he used to work for Steve Jobs. He said, this is what he learned from Steve Jobs doing this. Like he said,
I didn't know he worked for Steve.
Yeah, he worked for Steve Jobs, and he said Steve was a very tough person to work for. If you've read his biography by Walter Isaacson, which I have, I recommend it, but I like Walter Isaacson as a biographer.
Yeah.
I think that Steve Jobs led a very sad life. Like, I think he missed out. He was an amazing entrepreneur. He's an amazing visionary. But I think he just missed out on what life was all about. But what he said was, he was incredibly focused. And he always had 3 to 5 things that he had to get done that day. He would not let anything get in front of those 3 to 5 things. So I'll continue on this other side.
A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it.
So we're talking about ordering our day. Just mentioned about Steve Jobs. One thing he was really good at, as I was saying, is he was able to be hyper focused on things. He would not let distractions come in and disrupt the things that he was going to accomplish. And so those things are things that I think we can take away as Christian men, as Christian businessmen, as Christian fathers, like, and apply to our life that's a good. Right, a couple things that I've decided to do since I started my own company and realized, like, hey, in order for me to make this happen, I have to habituate myself into this, like, hyper focused aspect. Because as good as I thought that I was on ordering my day and time management, the more complex that your life becomes, whether it is adding more children, like getting married, adding more children into your life, moving, the community that you're around, the business that you're around, the people that you're around, like, the more that gets added into your life, the more complex it can get and the easier it is to get distracted, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to guard your time and your focus to achieve the things in which that you're called to do for your vocation. And so a couple things that I have, just decided to do since I've started my company is, one, I have this app called Brick, which is on your phone that you add. And so, like, it's this little plate that you put on the wall or wherever you want to put it, and you tap your phone to it. And as soon as you tap your phone, you set the hours, and as soon as you tap your phone to it, it basically blocks all apps that are distracting.
Right? Any ones you want it to block.
Any ones that you want it to block. And then there's a time that it'll unbrick it, basically, or you can go up there and touch to your phone and it'll unbrick it, right? So I just decided that has to be put into my life. And that's been a benefit. Another thing that I decided to do, and this is not necessarily for ordering my time, but for my discipline, is I used to, like, set multiple alarms to get up. Because I was always worried, like, what if I oversleep? What if I don't wake up fully and turn my alarm off or whatever? But then I realized the days in which I knew I had to get up at a certain time never needed 2 alarms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have to catch a flight and you have to be somewhere, you have to be at the airport at a certain time in the morning, you don't need 2 alarms. You're, like, waking up, at least I do. Like, you'll wake up 4 times before your alarm actually goes off because you're worried about missing your flight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like 10 minutes before.
Right before the alarm goes off.
And it's like, man, this is an annoying amount of time to have woken up before my alarm.
Right. But also I realized, like, hey, the second alarm is just a crutch. I don't need it to get up. If you consider your days, like, that you need... Like, you have things to do today, You're called to something to do today. You shouldn't need it. And then two, it's like it doesn't help you. It doesn't make you feel like you're more refreshed. It's not like you can go to sleep for another 15 minutes and be like, oh, I'm so glad I did that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been saying this for years. This is, you know, that don't set more than one alarm. Don't snooze. You set your alarm and when you need to get up and you get up at that time. Setting alarms, I know sometimes some people will set alarms before they're, you know, it's like, oh, I need to get up at 6. So I'm going to set a 5:45 alarm so I can kind of start waking up. It's like, that's dumb. Don't do that. All you're doing is interrupting good sleep. You know, you've been sleeping. You're basically cutting out 15 minutes of sleeping time by just waking yourself up and then you're going to have to go back to bed. That's not good for you. It's also just bad discipline.
Right.
You decide when you want to get up. You set your alarm and you get up. Like, if you can, make it so that snooze is not an option on your phone or whatever you use. Snoozing is for lazy people. Just get up.
And one thing that...
If you didn't need to get up at that time, don't set your alarm at that time.
One thing that Sarty Lunge actually says that haunts me all the time is that one thing that men fall into is to become slave to the pillow.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's just another thing that I've just decided I'm not going to do that. Sarty Lunge actually also talks about, like, and this is kind of a Thérèse of Lisieux example, but he says, small time focused faithfully beats big time used erratically. He really stresses how, you know, that you're not at the mercy of your moods, that a lot of time that you spend throughout the day erratically and unfocused or undisciplined is not good. Even if you can get things done, that small time focus is important. Our good friend Carl Graham, who's actually been on the show. And one thing he told me to do when I was first starting the business, he said, set your alarm on your phone when you go to work every 30 minutes. And when the 30 minutes is up, just log what you did in that last 30 minutes. And then at the end of the day, look back and look at your log and see how much you were able to get done in 30-minute intervals. And if you do that, it kind of sets your mind of like, I have 30 minutes to get this done. Or I have 30 minutes to make progress in this big project that I'm working on.
Yeah.
And it'll also reveal the times in which you are like, I got 15 minutes before my next call, or, you know, my that call ended early. I'll go hit the water cooler for a minute, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And you actually
just hop
realize
on Facebook, I got 5 minutes till my next call. Let me just, right. You know, whatever.
And
let me just waste it.
You realize how much time you actually waste yeah, yeah. there.
Doing that kind of stuff, keeping track in 30-minute increments, is sort of like when you start going to the gym. And then all of a sudden, you find you're more interested in eating healthy because you're making one good decision. It's, you know, keeping track sort of is that same mindset of, oh, yeah, yeah. No, let me do this. You know, it's like, oh, I'm keeping track. So let me do it well. You know, I'm going to really get to it and not let myself. It's easier to push those other distractions away, like wasting 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, so he just kind of piggyback off that. He also talks about how, like, the whole life as a should serve your vocation. And one thing we talked about, I don't know, a few weeks back, it may be actually a year ago. I don't remember. All these episodes end up kind of like running together. But we talked about how actually dying for your family is actually pretty easy. That it's living for your family is that's the tough part.
Uh-huh.
Meaning, like, okay, will I go work out and exercise for my family so that I'm a better man for my family? Will I go eat well so that I will live better for my family? Will I not engage in habits that is bad for my health or for my spiritual life so that I'm a better man for my family. It's like, so that I can live well for my family.
Yeah.
Not, because the dying part's somewhat easy. Like to take a bullet or something like that, you know, to go protect and be heroic and, you know, save your family. That a lot of times is the easy part. It's actually the idea of living well for your family that is the difficult part.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
And then he has, like, throughout the book, he cautions. And I remember this book was written maybe in, like, 1929 or something like that, you know. But he talks about recollection over noise. All, like, consistently. He talks about, like, that it's hard to be able to stay focused with so much noise. And that a scattered mind is pulled in 10 different directions. So you have to guard your silence and protect the conditions that help you go deep. Help you go deep into contemplation of whatever it is you're doing. Like contemplating being a better father, being a better husband, being a better businessman, like being better for your church. Like there have been so many times where I've had a 15, 20 minute drive somewhere and it's like, oh, I'll just pop on a podcast real quick. And then I catch myself like, no, I'm going to, or I'll try to make way in the audiobook that I'm listening to, maybe get almost a chapter in or something. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to. And that the time that I have during that helps me to actually think about the next thing I'm supposed to be doing or how I'm going to carry myself in the next meeting or how I'm going to approach myself to my children whenever I get home from work. And one of the telltale signs for me that when I don't have enough silence in my life is how easily I get distracted in adoration.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I also use that, or just really, I don't say just in adoration, but in prayer in general. You know, if I let myself, you know, just spend too much time on social media, for instance, just, you know, watching thing, you know, just mindless entertainment. The next day, inevitably, my prayer life is just a big struggle of lack of focus, just because that's what I've been doing with my mind. And I always noticed that.
Your
that's
thoughts.
Right. And you just, the constant video, you know, it like, it's like a strobe light to your brain, and, you know?
Absolutely.
No wonder you can't think. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Jimothy.
The chimney sweep.
He's here. Wearing a fine set of canvas overalls. I'm sorry, suspenders. Just really... You're really looking smashing today, Jim. I do say so myself. We're sipping on a little bit of Foolproof 1792, which is a lovely manly beverage that we're enjoying. Talking about, well, many things. Order, hierarchy of goods.
Which will lead
how
us...
How to live.
Yeah,
we're talking about how to live.
Which leads us into holy indifference. Okay, and so the reason why, like, this whole idea of ordering your time management, which I've just found, again, the more complex my life gets, the worse I think I am, the worse I realize
how bad you are.
How bad I am at time management.
Yeah.
And especially if you have other people that work for you. Because then not only are you managing your own time, but you have to manage your own time in such a way that you can still manage other people's time as well.
Right.
also as a father, like you have to manage your own time very well so that way you can manage your children's time as well.
Uh-huh.
But all this, it actually points to freedom. It's not control. It's not like I'm going to control my life for the sake of control, but it's for the sake of freedom. And a freedom not as an American sense of the word freedom, but as a Catholic sense of the word freedom, right?
Yeah.
That giving yourself the opportunity to do what you ought, not do whatever you want.
Yeah. Freedom is not the ability to choose blankly. Freedom is the ability to choose the good.
The good. Right. So by choosing the good, this leads in kind of to holy indifference, which is not apathy, right? Holy Correct. Indifference, you can think of it. It's very easy to think of like, oh, just whatever happens to me, you know, and like, I'm just going to let it happen.
Right. Because it's not actually indifference. It's a hyper preference. Holy indifference is hyper fixating on one specific preference, and that is the will of God.
That's right.
That you desire that so much, you don't care about the other things. Is it good things? Is it good times or difficult times that I have to deal with today? Oh, I don't care about that. All I want is the will of God in my life. I'm so focused on that.
Which is why we can't be the way at our mercy of our moods, correct, of how we yeah, feel.
That the way God's will manifests itself in my life, that to that I am indifferent.
Right. And St. Ignatius talks about this, right? He says that we make ourselves indifferent to all things created so that we do not cling to health over sickness, riches over poverty, honor over dishonor, a long life over a short life, of wanting only what leads us to the end, or of only wanting what leads us to the end and what we're made for. So all these things can be disordered if it's in and of themselves.
Right. Because none of these are the highest good.
Right.
You know, all of these things that you just mentioned have a place. I mean, they're all goods that have their own respective places in a hierarchy, but all of them are subservient to the will of our desire for God's will. They should be.
Right. It's St. Francis de Sales, and we've talked about him numerous times on the show. Intro to Devout Life is a book that also every man should read. Yeah. It's really good. He separates actually the idea from resignation from indifference, which I think is important here. He says, a resigned man accepts God's will, but still quietly prefers his own. The indifferent man has let go of the preferences itself. DeSales says uses the image of wax in the hand, ready to take whatever shape it is given. So he has this idea of like, you know, almost like a potter in clay. Like at the outset, it's just like whatever it ends up being is good.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because it's the creator, it's the maker who made it that way.
Who made it that way. Which I think is really so. My take on this is that a resigned man is like the first step to a wholly indifferent man. That a resigned man accepts God's will, right? So it's like, okay, your will be done. But you're still clinging on to your own will, which I think that
or prefer it.
Yeah, you cling on to like what you want, not his will. Like you've accepted it.
Yeah. If you don't get what you want, you're okay with it, but you still do have a preference. Whereas the indifferent man says, no, I don't even care. Like give me trials today or give me good things. I don't even want one or the other.
I only want the will of the Lord.
Yeah. Whereas the resigned man would say, Lord, whatever your plan is for me today, I accept it. But I sure would like good things to happen to me, you know, which, let's be honest, that's a reasonable thing. That's a reasonable thing to want. I know I certainly have prayed many times, Lord, whatever you want, That's what I want. But if it's all the same to you, I sure would like it to go this way. So just let, you know, it, if it's six one way, half a dozen the other, from a divine perspective, how about we go to the left?
Right? Yeah. So I think that there's two things that we need to be aware of as Catholic men. We have to have fidelity to what we're called to, like to our vocation.
Always.
But we also have to have abandonment to his divine will.
Yeah.
Right. And so those are the two things that we're, that are constantly need to be on top of mind, that our vocation is important, what we're called to do, but also any trials, tribulations, joys, sorrows, whatever it is that is brought to us, is that we take it as a saint.
Sure. And this is something that we need constant reminding of. Well, we need to, you know, sort of like every morning when you get up, you need to have a daily offering, right? Where you're going to offer yourself, offer the day. We need to make a habit of doing this on the regular. And it's sort of providential that we're talking about this tonight, because just today I was in adoration and was kind of doing this, realizing that, you know, I haven't really said these words in a while about, Lord, take it all from me. I don't care. I mean, I do care. I would care, but I would say yes. I'm in. Make me rich, make me poor. I just want you. And I was just realizing, you know, this is not a prayer I've said in a while. And it was a prayer I think I needed to say. This is before I even knew what we were talking about tonight. So
nice. It's
providential, I think, that we are talking about it today. Because it's just one of those things that, just like being grateful, there's all kinds of spiritual truths we need to remind ourselves of on a regular basis. And this is one of those things where you just rededicate yourself completely and totally to him, right? That I have, like, I'll just use just me as an example. The Lord has blessed me in so many ways. I have a
best friend who's super holy.
Yeah. I mean, just sure. Just like that.
Yeah.
For instance,
another really good friend who's invented the yummy scale.
Yeah. He's literally inventing inventing ways of measuring whiskey. Unbelievable. If you can,
the gift that you have, bro.
If you can even imagine. But I have a beautiful family.
Mm-hmm.
I have a nice place to live. Like when I look around at my life, it's filled with good things, right? So I need to, and this is just something that we need to do, constantly remember, I cannot be attached to these things. That my life is not about enjoying these things. Because if I do that, all I do is turn the orientation of my soul inward. And now it becomes, the mission of my life becomes about serving me. Because I've now attached myself to these things. So just, I kind of do this exercise about, what if the Lord called me, like, my house, it's gone. Would I be okay with that?
Tornado.
Yeah. And like, it's just gone. Something happens and I don't have this place to live in anymore. And at first that kind of, there's like this moment of panic,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then you just say no, because I trust it. And then you have this question, do you trust in the Lord? If he takes your house away, do you trust still that he will care for you, right? Are you willing to say yes? This is not even a real scenario. It's just an exercise. But even in this moment, will you say yes to trusting him? And it's scary to do that even as an exercise, but it's something good to do as just a reminder of, no, I'm his. He's caring for me. And I do need to detach myself so that I might be more abandoned myself to his will for me.
We're out of time on Catholic Radio. Thank you to all the Catholic radio stations who carry the Catholic Command Show. Check us out on the podcast. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
I think all of this can be summed up by the great philosophers of the 1970s band 38 Special.
Okay.
With their song, Hold On Loosely.
But Don't Let Go.
That's like, Hold On Loosely. That is kind of like what this idea is, right? You understand your vocation. You understand what you're called to. You hold on to that. But you hold on loosely because you don't know the will of you don't truly know the will of God at times.
Yeah.
And perhaps he takes all of that away from you.
And you're holding on only because you've discerned that's what God's calling you to hold on to.
The will
of
the Lord.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that distinction Francis de Sales was making between indifference and resignation. I think even if you can get to the point of resignation, that's amazing. Getting to the point where you have spiritual resignation to God's will, what a gift. It's not the end, right? There is more. There's a deep, you can yet go deeper, mm-hmm. further up and further in. There's still more. There's always more. So once you get there, don't stop. Keep trusting more in the Lord. And that's really what it comes down to is, do you actually trust him, right? There's so many things. It's easy to trust him in certain things. But, there's other parts, you know, when it comes just right down to it. Do you actually trust him that he is going to take care of you, you know, like in a radical way? And you have to say yes. You have to get to the point. You have to train yourself to where you can say yes to that question.
Yes, I agree. Are there any other tips that you can think of that you have found helpful either ordering your day or growing in holy indifference that's helped you?
I don't know if I can say tips, but there are certain, I've had certain moments that I reflect on in my life. There was this one time I was driving home from work and a car stopped quickly in front of me. There was really nothing unusual. I mean, that's happened to everybody hundred times, right? Where, you got to kind of stop quickly. So there was nothing remarkable about this particular moment,
mm-hmm.
except that it caused it for some reason or another. I had the thought, what if I had just died? Like right here and there. And my immediate thoughts were, who's going to care for my family? Who's going to take care of my wife and my kids? And then my next thought was one of humility that, you know, I'm sure the Lord was like whispering this to me. He said, not audibly, but just what I was hearing him say was, do you think you're the one who takes care of your wife and your kids? Is it you, Dave? Mm-hmm. You are the one, huh, who takes care of them? Or is it not rather I who take care of them? Have they not always been mine first? Is it not I who have given you to them? I care for them, and I use you to do that. And I don't need you to care for them. But I want you to be the one to do it.
Hmm.
And just a remembrance of even the things that I hold dearest, my family, to remember to let them go, right? That with this utter trust that if something happens to me, if the Lord calls me home, they're not going to be the Lord will never abandon them. Right? And so sometimes I'll go back to that moment. I'll reflect on that because it was very powerful for me to think and sort of hear those words. It really meant a lot to me, and it still does, about ultimately how much God cares for us. That no matter what, he's always going to care for us. Because I think a lot of the times we struggle with abandoning ourselves to his will because we question whether he can be trusted.
Mm.
We wonder, can I actually trust the Lord? Will he be good for his promises? Or will he, like everyone else in my life, let me down in small ways or big ones, right? So that's the struggle. And that's, I think, why it's so difficult, because of the human experience and how many times we have to deal with disappointment in our relationships. So just, we have to, and this is a gift of faith, teach ourselves, train ourselves by virtue, by prayer, by acts of the will, and by reason, and looking at the world the way it is, the word of God, what has he done for us? What do we know for sure, right? That he took on flesh, he came to give everything for us already. He's already done this. So absolutely, we can say with reason, with good reason, and in actually using our reason, that yes, he is trustworthy. He won't be like everyone else in our life who has disappointed us. And so, but you know, once again, we have to remind ourselves. It's not like we're not angels who think about and decide things one time and all of our decisions have an eternal nature, right? We're not like that. And so that's why we need habits. The angels don't need or have habits. They choose things once forever. But we need virtues. We need habits so that we can maintain that order. Because if we don't keep things habitually in the right place, then they get out of order, right? And then we struggle. So by reminding ourselves who God is, loving him the way he ought to be loved, right? And just constantly trying to do that better, we can trust him more and therefore abandon ourselves. Because you will never be able to abandon yourself to something you don't trust.
Great point.
Right? So we have to develop the virtue and the gift of faith. And that the gift of faith, there's a reason why the great writers talk about that as this light, this divine light on the intellect, because it lets us see things the way they really are. It lets us see him. And then we don't have to question, you know, who is he? Can I trust him? Because it's hard to see him, right? You can't necessarily just look him in the eyes and shake his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, he's the most real thing that exists and the most dependable. So I don't know if it was kind of a long answer, but
that was great. No, that was perfect.
All right. Jim? No. Okay.
We'll see you on